Was it when he retrieved Turner's journal, which held the tree and all its secrets from enemy hands? Was it when he and the book club partnered with Ava to take down her mother, Christina Culebra, the head of the treasonous Red Movement, and the only person who knew how to fully wield the power of the tree? Was it when he unknowingly helped Ava and his friend Ying poison those Red Army soldiers to stop an impending coup? Was it when he fell in love and abandoned the book club to join Ava and the Sword of Eden, her counter-movement in the fight against Red? Was it when they bombed their first Red Army barracks? Or was it tonight, when he, Ava, and the others would destroy a Red campaign office? It was hard to say. And that's what terrified him. He still had Turner's journal, the key to fully understanding the Tree of Knowledge and anticipating the future, but he had been unable to crack its cipher. So the journal had just sat there, and Albert had drifted from the parts of the tree that Angus had taught him before he died, before Red killed him. He had drifted from the cocoon of logic and mathematics that had made him feel safe all these years. He had drifted so far from everything he was and everything he wanted to be that he wasn't sure he even knew the way home anymore. "Aardvark, come in. Aardvark, are you there?" said Ava in the Bluetooth earbud in his ear. Albert snapped out of his trance. "We really need to come up with a better code name for me. But yes, I'm here." Something about making jokes distracted him from the moral ambiguity of what they were about to do. "What about you, Gopher?" asked Ava to Gabe, one of their partners in the resistance movement. Her voice quavered with anticipation. "Ditto on my code name, and I'm right next to you, so yes, I can hear you," said Gabe. Ava sighed. "I will make reassessing code names the top agenda item once we're done here. In the meantime, Aardvark, what do you see?" Albert assessed himself and his surroundings. He wore all black on his tall, wiry frame, black pants, a black wool turtleneck sweater, and a black ski mask. The ski mask itched like hell, and the sweater was a bit too snug thanks to the Kevlar body armor underneath. His blood was pumping like a racehorse, and sweat pooled under his arms. It was as though his body could instinctually sense the moral ambiguity of this night. He looked down at his feet and spotted his reflection in the light bouncing off a puddle in the street. He had aged. His sandy brown hair had receded cautiously around his forehead, which carried light creases. The stubble on his face now held a sprinkling of gray. Crow's feet crept from his eyes. What would his colleagues back at the Princeton Mathematics Department think of him now? This civil war had taken its toll. A waxing moon lit up the night sky above and Old Town Alexandria beneath it. Albert scanned the block. It was a warm, dewy night, and he had never seen the old shopping and entertainment district so quiet. The 18th-century brick buildings, normally bustling with shoppers and diners, stood in silence. The sidewalk sat empty, save for the routine patrol of Red Army soldiers outside the campaign office. The Potomac rippling in the distance produced the only sound. He looked at the historic clock on Washington Street. It was 3:30 a.m. Even in the silence of deep night, Albert loved Old Town. The narrow streets and low-rise brownstones of the village seemed to bring to life the best of the American Revolution. He could still feel the energy and hope of revolutionary America echoing here centuries later. He pictured George Washington or Thomas Jefferson walking these streets, with horse-drawn carriages clip-clopping behind them. That was what made the stain that was the Red campaign office so repugnant. Black and red paint covered the beautiful, historic brick facade. Bright red synthetic banners with Christina Culebra's face blocked the original wood-framed windows. Campaign lawn signs with red backgrounds and black trees shaped like tridents dotted the manicured green lawn out front. Mind-numbing slogans like, "A Better Life," decorated the exterior walls like graffiti sprayed over a Van Gogh. The campaign office stood dark and empty. Two red soldiers patrolled the block, shuffling their feet along the empty sidewalk. It was clear that night patrol had not been their top choice of assignment.